I don't know which one's the lead singer. I don't know which one's the lead singer. Slide out. Oh, there he is. Just like that.
Wow, how Diana Ross of you. You're such a diva.
I am. Well, am I?
Okay, everybody, welcome to episode number 16 of Podcast for Good. I am program manager Philip Kerrigan. This is, as always,
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the combined fund drive.
There you go. Nail it on take number 3 for Ms.
Shut
Lucas.
Up! Sometimes you just forget who you are
sure,
and what you do
sure.
for a living.
Wow, that's really okay? deep. That's okay. really deep.
Yeah, you're Sometimes welcome.
Sometimes you just forget who you are, man.
Yeah. You gotta find the person inside
yeah.
you.
Yeah, find your true authentic self.
Mm-hmm. And then tell people.
To, you know.
That's who you
like
are.
Like you. I don't know. Who yeah. knows what's going on there. All right. So so we decided, because this is a sort of interesting month for recognizing a worldwide problem, Slavery and Human Trafficking Month mixed in with Stalking Awareness Month, we would hit you with a lighthearted issue.
Absolutely.
And that is slavery and human trafficking.
Yeah.
Which is a bigger issue than I think people actually recognize.
Yeah,
to be
absolutely.
Honest with you.
Well, if it's not something that you've had in your world and in your life,
right.
why would you know about it?
Right. So today, to kind of talk a little bit about this particular issue, we brought on the National Growth Strategy Outreach Manager, Jo Lembo. That is a mouthful to say. She is from Shared Hope International. They are an organization, obviously an international organization that goes around.
Yeah.
What's kind of cool is they teach younger people, in part, to recognize the signs of someone who might be a trafficker
yeah.
and to avoid those sort of things. And then they also try to work with governments, county, city, statewide, to try and even international governments to try and figure out ways to lower the amount of human trafficking that happens throughout
yeah.
the world. So it's very cool.
Yeah.
So in a couple weeks, one of the things we're going to do is change up the format a bit to Podcasts for Good. Since we usually have two charities, we're going to dive right into the interviews most of the time, and then we're going to hit you with the cool stats or do fun trivia in
yeah.
the middle. But since we only have one charity this time, we'll hit you with the stats here at the beginning, some things associated with sexual and human trafficking. So, Heather, why don't you talk a little bit about some of the stats that you found?
Yeah. So, as you guys will listen, when we talk with Jo, she talks mostly about any kind of trafficking that revolves around sexual services. So there's things like prostitution, pornography, exotic dancing, massage parlors. People who are in those particular work environments may not be doing that of their own free will.
Right.
There are also people who are human trafficked to work in services in agricultural, factory work, or sweatshops. There's businesses like hotels, nail salons, and home cleaning services, and then restaurants and domestic laborers.
Sure, right.
So
yeah.
I'm going to post a link for this story, but
cool.
I read a story last year from a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist
yeah.
Named Alex Tizon, and uh-huh. he passed away. But I think that when he wrote this story, I don't know if he knew that he was going to be dying.
Okay.
Or if his death was a surprise.
Right.
But the story he wrote was called My Family's Slave.
Okay.
So it was about a woman who lived with his family
uh-huh.
throughout his entire life, who was actually gifted to his mother when she was like 13.
Yeah.
So her father had purchased this child.
Were they like a well-off family or something?
Yeah, yeah. Her okay. father had, he was, I think he was a general in the military, and he...
Wow.
He was, it was he and his daughter.
Yeah.
And, he wanted her to have a companion.
Sure.
He wanted someone to take care of her and do things for her. And so he bought a child.
Yeah.
And they were similar in age.
Mm-hmm.
So when she got married and moved to the U.S. with her husband,
yeah.
the woman came with. And she was the nanny. She cleaned.
Wow.
She did everything that...
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So he had this woman living in his home. And when he'd have friends over as a child, they'd mm-hmm. be like, well, who is this? And
yeah.
they'd be like, oh, don't worry about her.
That's
so
amazing.
Like, just ignored the woman in the corner
right,
kind
right.
of a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was essentially a slave. to that family. So, like, you can see some signs of trafficking within people. Like, if someone who doesn't speak English is injured on the job, they show signs of old bruising. If, like, you ask them what city they're in and they don't know.
Yeah.
There could be people who, like, if they're brought to an emergency room for some kind of medical service and they're accompanied by someone who's controlling.
Mm-hmm.
And insists on speaking on their behalf.
Okay.
Or someone who is quiet or fearful in your neighborhood, or like if you see like, hey, there's a kid who lives in the house down the street,
yeah.
but I never see them get on the bus for school, and I never see them out playing.
Right.
Like, what relation does this kid have to
right.
being in this home?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are they okay?
Right.
Kind of a thing. So there's lots of little signs, but there are definitely things that I think most people are like, well, it's none of my business.
Yeah, right. That's
like,
exactly
you
right.
put your nose into somebody's business kind uh-huh. of a thing. You feel bad about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that would seem to me to happen a lot.
Yeah.
There's so many correlations between the podcast we did with Safe Place and the podcast we did, or the interview we did with Joe Lembo.
Yeah.
The sort of... denial of the problem.
Yes.
That seems to be pretty, seems to run rampant through the entire issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm going to hit you with some of the worst countries for human trafficking and some of the worst states for human trafficking.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So the top five worst countries in the world according to the UN Global Report on Trafficking Persons are... saddest drumroll in the world, please. Tunisia.
Yeah.
At number five, Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. This one was stark to me. Havana, Cuba.
Yeah, that's...
It's amazing.
It's
unbelievable.
Crazy.
And their main issue is with kids ages 13 through 20.
Yeah,
that's
that is not
heartbreaking.
Good. Yeah.
Kabul, Afghanistan.
That's surprising.
And then the worst city in the world by the numbers is Bangkok, Thailand.
That's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Here in the United States, your top five states that have the most issues associated with human trafficking are Georgia, Nevada, Florida, Ohio at number two.
Crazy.
This stat was insane. 9 out of every 10 children who ran away from home became involved in some capacity in human trafficking.
In Ohio.
That's crazy.
Yeah. What is going on in Ohio?
And then California is the number one. And the biggest thing they say is there might be close to... they measure these in like acts out of 100,000.
Okay.
Right? Much like they do with homeless population.
Sure.
What they say is that California, 2.55 people out of every 100,000 are involved in human trafficking in some way, like they get abducted or they're involved in human sex trafficking. But the starkest part for California is that they think there might be 500,000 undocumented cases because of the amount of undocumented immigrants that have come into the state.
I could see, like, that would be a thing with anybody who's undocumented. They are under the impression that they're there illegally. They're doing something wrong.
Right.
So if they were to report something to the authorities, why would they believe them?
Yeah.
They'd punish them, right?
Right. So
nobody wants to be punished, especially if they're being abused.
Right. So in a weird way, the issue of immigration... is actually a safety thing for those folks too.
Yeah.
In a weird way. Like, that's so strange to me.
You wouldn't
about.
Think that that's the...
Like, we think of it like... We think of it like...
Like, the rhetoric
immigration needs to
jobs,
be changed
right?
because of how it's affecting us. But,
yeah.
I mean, immigration needs to be fixed because
of
how it's affecting
them.
These people
yeah.
too, right? I mean, if there's a potential for 500,000 cases of human or sex trafficking... in California that they don't know about.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's way too many.
Yeah. So that, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on. One of the things as we dive into the interview with Joe Lembo that you're going to see is that there's a lot of stuff that you've heard about with human trafficking that it completely verifies what you've heard.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are these other things that I found very interesting that
yeah.
were like, wow, I'd never thought of it before.
Yeah.
yeah. So, before we dive in, hit me with the question of the pod.
So it is a random question.
Yes, as are most questions with your questions.
True, true. But I thought, you know, like, you see, like, movies, the shady people in the movies, yes. they're always, like, weirdos in the corner, they're not clean, they might have...
They're not clean?
I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, like, human trafficking people are not nice
people. They're not nice people.
So,
yeah.
I thought, you know what is shady?
And apparently they have a... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought something could be shady about, like, mustaches.
Okay.
Okay.
Mustache equals shady for you.
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit. I don't know anybody who really legitimately has a mustache and is like, I have this mustache because, and sure. then it's a reason.
Sure.
Like, it's just like, I don't know. You yeah. have a mustache okay. to try it out, maybe.
Okay.
Okay, and then see if it works for you. And then you find out, oh, right. no, it doesn't.
So the way your math works
yeah.
is that
mustache good people,
so what you're saying, yeah, so what you're saying is good people can have a mustache.
They can.
Right?
Yes.
But all bad people have a mustache.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Magnum P.I. was a good guy, though.
Oh, that's true. But well, but this is what we're saying. What we're saying fictional. Is good people can have mustaches, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They yes. can or cannot.
Yeah.
But all people must have a mustache.
For if they're terrible, yeah. Hitler had a mustache.
Okay, so your terrible. Question. So your question in the pot is what?
Philip Kerrigan, have you ever had a mustache?
I have had a mustache.
Have you had it singularly, like? Not just by itself.
No, no. I have always ventured. I've always, like, no. So when I was in high school, I rocked the goatee.
I did want to see these pictures.
Yeah, yeah. I'll show everybody. I'll show everybody my senior class photo.
Nice.
I also rocked the connected soul patch to just the bottom.
Did your was your soul patch just like a strip, or was it pointy? Or
it was a strip.
Okay, so it wasn't pointy like an evil Van Dyke beard.
No, no, it wasn't. It wasn't like the you know, like those old school like Three Musketeers type.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah.
Right. It was
like 90s R&B.
It was 90s R&B. That's okay. the best way to put it. It was yeah. Color Me Bad.
Color Me Bad. Nice.
That's exactly what it was. So that was my high school. That was my high school a soul patch experience.
Okay.
Met my wife. She hated facial hair, so I cut it off. I have never rocked the mustache solely by itself.
Yeah.
So my dad has it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he could get away with not looking like it. He would look like my mom. I'm like his mother if, like, he didn't have it.
Yeah.
But I could never rock it. And I've always kind of thought, well, for Movember, I should give it a shot. And then I get there, like, I shave this and shit. Sure. And we're just rocking the mustache. Yeah. And I look in the mirror, I'm like, God, no. God, yeah. get that away.
Well, I don't understand something, too. Like, my brother has a beard, and he will get yeah. food in it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I'll just be like, hey, buddy.
I know.
Got a little something to mess out there. But, like, with a mustache, I can imagine there being so many things trapped inside sure. that mustache. Sure,
I can tell you. I got to tell
out of your
you,
nose yeah. or going into your mouth.
I know. I got to tell you, the one thing I will say is I think the beard is unfortunate. I think the beard as a trend is yeah. unfortunate. I'm not. I don't.
You
like
don't
it.
Follow.
I don't like it. And I'm sorry to anybody who has one. This is not against you personally. You might be a good person, right?
As opposed to if you had a mustache by yourself.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's different.
Terrible.
Obviously, through Heather's math, that's an issue.
1 + 1 equals bad mustache.
Yeah. I don't like it. Like yeah. I you know, it's just one of those hipster trends that's big now. Is to get a mustache and see if how long you can grow it.
Oh, get a mustache and do the twirly kind of Raleigh fingers thing.
Yeah, and then you rock your skinny jeans and
type
you're
on a typewriter.
Yeah, I'm not into it, man. Yeah. You open like a gin and tonic restaurant. A deconstructed gin and tonic.
Dude.
Yeah. I mean, you know which hipster bars
you
I'm talking about.
You have to add the gin to the tonic yourself.
Right. I'm just not a fan. Mm. They also make their own microbrew there.
Oh, yeah.
You know. It's a super strong IPA. It's got some extra hops with some citrus notes.
Oh, that's funny. Like, I'm not a hipster. You're not a hipster. Yeah. But I don't know how many hipsters you have in your life.
I have a few.
Yeah, but like, you know. Life. I feel like we're experts on this subject.
I do, because they're all around you. Like, you can't fight them anymore. They're at the gates. These people.
And they're pounding on the door.
Well, they don't pound.
We were here before.
They're sensitive.
It was cool.
The door is, you know.
Yeah.
The door could have feelings.
It could.
But so they don't pound.
They were definitely there yes. before it was cool.
So to answer your question in a long-winded form.
Yeah.
I have had facial hair. Sure. I hope that I'm a good guy, but I've never rocked a soul mustache, so I have that going
okay.
for me.
Okay, yeah. I would think that adds to the good guy cred.
I think so.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. Also probably just doing good things. Probably,
yeah, yeah. I think that's probably a better barometer than a mustache.
Yeah.
For how good of a person you are.
So since we've digressed, so much,
yeah.
We're going to go ahead and pull a 180 here, and we're going to go ahead and toss it to the interview.
Boom.
With the National Growth Strategy Outreach Manager, Jo Lembo. Here she is from Shared Hope International. All right, so here we are with the Growth Outreach Manager, Jo Lembo from Shared Hope International. Did I get your title right? Because you just
told me. Let's say National Outreach Manager.
There you go. That. National Outreach Manager. She literally just told me. So, Jo, thanks for coming on the podcast and talking to us for a few minutes.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
So can you give us a little history about Shared Hope International?
Yes. Linda Smith, former Congresswoman, U.S. Congresswoman, is the founder. She was in Washington State legislation in 1983 in politics, and then quite on a historical fluke, she was a write-in candidate to the U.S. Senate and went to Washington, D.C. as a very young freshman legislator. And she had several years there. During that time, she heard about trafficking in India. She made a trip to India, deeply impacted because the children she saw were her granddaughter's ages.
Right.
And she had to do something. So she began the process then of building villages internationally. So our first village was in Mumbai, India.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And then she came back, of course, and resumed her political career, thinking that she was okay. I took care of that problem. I did what I know to do. And it was in 1998 that she decided, rather than continue her political career in D.C., she would start Shared Hope International. So in November of 1998, she started Shared Hope International. And it's been quite, looking back, it's been quite a story of her political career, which actually laid the foundation for everything she's done for Shared Hope. And Shared Hope is very much involved in legislation and making change in the U.S. to not only eradicate sex trafficking, but to protect victims and to bring legislation that will all the way around prevent, restore, and then bring justice for these victims of trafficking. We do stay in a lane. We call it our lane, and that's domestic minor sex trafficking, DMST, which means we focus on those who are U.S.-born victims.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on those who are minors.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are being sexually, commercially exploited. So mm-hmm. even though we care about international victimization, we care about adult victimization, we care about all of the issues that are circling around this DMST, we do stay where we are most effective. And so that's why in all of our materials, our Protected Innocence Challenge, which is the report cards, that are issued every year to the attorney generals of every state, telling them how they measure up with the laws in their state to fight trafficking. That all is going to remain focused on U.S.-born minor children that are being sold for sex acts.
Got it, got it. Wow, that is, wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's a lot. So you did talk about it a little bit, but as far as nationally, what does your organization do in a community?
There are a number of things. My job in particular as the National Outreach Manager is to manage trained volunteers across the nation. And like I said, we have about 1,500 across the nation. We're in 47 states. Mm-hmm. I just got an email this morning in North Dakota, so may be able to say we're in 48 states.
Nice.
Where we train them online. It's a free training. First week qualify them. They do have to apply and get character reference, and on occasion we'll do a background check. And then they take this online training, and then we connect them to other ambassadors in their region. We have regional coordinators. I have about 9 of them that manage 27 states, so that helps me a lot because I can't possibly manage all these folks.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And be sure they're equipped and empowered and encouraged and informed. We have a lot of ways we do that to stay connected to them and to network them together. So my job with them is simply to get the prevention education out across the nation in every community, in every town, mm-hmm. everywhere we possibly can. They, with guidelines, they will do radio and television interviews. They'll reach the audiences in their region any way they can. They go into civic clubs, into schools, into churches. They are out there. They're passionate individuals, and they're volunteers. So they're just doing this out of the clear call in their own lives to make a difference and to rescue and keep kids from being trafficked. Prevention is our key. We feel like if these kids, young people, only knew the signs, they would not be susceptible to what the traffickers are trying to do. So that's what I do.
Sure.
I'm also over the Faith Initiative, which engages and empowers the faith communities across the nation. It is a latent army. It's a lot of people who are passionate, who feel like they have a mandate from a creator or from God, mm-hmm. and so they feel like they have to do something. And we have a faith summit coming up in June at Bethel University in St. Paul, Minnesota, where we will gather these advocates, professionals, and service providers from across the nation from a faith point of view.
Right.
Okay. So that's kind of a unique thing that we do. We do have a faith base, but obviously we're training social workers, law enforcement, we're training schools and judges and prosecutors, and we're influencing legislation. So our faith base generally stays on the back burner. But with Linda Smith's political background and her ability to communicate to members of Congress, mm-hmm. we bring that to the fore, and that's what you're generally going to see. So mm-hmm. we do that in the U.S. We are strong on the front to help legislators create laws that will protect, will help kids, will bring services for those who are exploited, and then we'll also just encompass the whole prevention thing. How can we stop this from happening? Interesting fact, right now there are still 27 states that have laws on the books that will arrest a minor for the crime of prostitution.
Wow.
So that's basically charging a rape victim with their rape.
Right.
It's 27 states. So we are working really hard on non-criminalization legislature mm-hmm. to stop arresting minors for the crime committed against them. It's a big job because a lot of states, they're just getting started.
Yeah.
You know, when we released the first report cards in 2011, Rob McKenna was at the head of the Attorney General's nationwide, and at that conference in Seattle in November of 2011, we released the first report cards, and there were no A's, and there were a host of F's, and
wow,
then everything in between.
Yeah.
There were only four states, I think, at that time that had a B.
Wow.
And this is not how states are fighting trafficking. This is how their laws
right.
are fighting. So
right.
it's the
sure.
framework for how their state can be fighting. It doesn't mean their law enforcement is trained to enforce those laws. It doesn't mean their judges understand those laws in order to bring convictions. But it means, how do your laws look, Mr. AG?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so at that time, that was in 2011, only four states had it as a felony to buy a child for sex.
Wow,
I believe that. Now, if there was incest or pedophilia, if there was child abuse, any kind of sexual abuse, that was a felony with a minor. But if the buyer bought money to the crime, somehow it was that kid's fault and they were a prostitute.
Wow.
Now, every state, and this is what gets me out of bed in the morning, every state has a law on the books now, including Hawaii, that was one of our last ones, in Virginia, to establish a law that makes it a felony to buy a kid for sex. So that's
wow.
a lot of wins in
yeah.
just 7 short years, or
yeah.
6 short years, really. We just started 2018.
Yeah. So, Joe, can you walk us through really quick how it is that, because you deal with mostly minors, so give us an example of how a child here in the United States could even sort of become mixed up in human trafficking. How does it typically work? The child runs away from home and then sort of is befriended by people. How does it usually work? What are the sort of main examples that you see?
That's a good question, Philip. And the one thing that you said was the child runs away from home, so you are tagging an at-risk behavior, and that is the majority of the minors in the U.S. They are in an 85% of those who are trafficked every year, there are those at risk. They've been mm-hmm. sexually abused. They're from a drug environment, or they are drug addicted. They're truant. They're runaways. They're throwaways. Some families are like, I've had it with you. Just leave.
Yeah.
And those kids are particularly vulnerable. They're males and females. They are transgender youth. There is not a one stereotypical kid who's at risk. In that at-risk group, all of them are at risk. And these are the kids that we see end up down there in Thurston County in juvie. You know, these mm-hmm. are the kids. And And I've worked with Jessica Anderson down there to bring a program of awareness to these kids. And it was amazing. Out of 40, 12 to 14-year-olds, she showed a 20-minute film. It's our chosen film that documents actually girls that are not at risk. And I wasn't sure it would apply. And three times during a short 20-minute film, little girls raised their hand and said, "You mean when I was walking home from the bus station in the middle of the night and it was raining, and that guy said he'd give me a ride if I would do this to him? That was trafficking." Wow. "Yes, honey. You were 12. He should have helped you. He's an adult. He should have not made you pay with your body for that ride home."
Oh, yeah.
So that's the kind of risk factor we see in the majority of children who are trafficked. Now, when I say 85%, it's very, very hard to get statistics that are accurate because we don't get W-2s from pimps on all these minors who are working for him. We don't get reports from them annually on how many kids are out there. What we do get is kids coming into service. And as they come into services, we can interview them, we can gather and glean information. So National Center for Missing and Exploited Children had 2 years ago roughly 423,000 missing kids, and they estimated 100,000 of those kids are being taken into trafficking each year in the U.S.
Yeah.
But that's still a squishy number. When we quote, I mean, you'll hear all kinds of numbers, 300,000 a year in the U.S., 100,000 a year in the U.S., everything in between. You'll hear millions in the U.S.
Yeah.
All of those numbers are just educated, or not so educated, guesses. I mean, you can't Google this and get an accurate number.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at is using National Center Missing Exploited Children's estimate of 100,000 kids in play every year in the U.S., and then looking at 85% of them are this at-risk group. Now, the other group, the 15%, these are the ones that I'm particularly passionate about. They're from good communities. They're from two-family homes. They're cheerleaders. They're athletes. They're community service. They're in youth group. These are the kids no one would ever guess would be at risk. And the reason they're at risk is one simple factor. They don't know. They don't know the signs.
Yeah.
They don't know how these guys act. And in, there are generally, I say, five types of trafficking. There's probably about 25 that you could actually label. But one is the boyfriend pimp, and that's probably the most common, where the scholar guy comes along and acts like he's interested, and he woos her and takes a lot of time. He may take 6 or 8 months to become her friend, to build her trust, to hear her hopes and dreams, and then begin to capitalize on those hopes and dreams. He'll give her things she can't afford. He may give her a cell phone that's private just for us. We can talk anytime you want. He'll be a perfect gentleman. He won't sexually confront her. He won't come at her sexually. He'll be her friend. He'll be her trusted confidant. And after a period of time, she trusts him and believes he loves her, and that's when he makes his move. There's also gang trafficking, and most often, kids, girls in particular, they're not gang members. They actually are going to be contributing revenue to the trafficking or to the gang, and that's going to be through trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally how particularly females that are inducted into gangs are being used for their bodies to bring revenue.
Mm-hmm.
The third is familial trafficking. This is a really heartbreaking one, and as our economy struggles and people, opiate crisis in particular, families are desperate to either buy their drugs or pay the rent because they're buying their drugs, and they'll sell their kids.
Wow.
This is where you see victims as young as 3 years old, and that is just heartrending to hear those stories. Then there's also survival sex, and that is also trafficking. That's the little girl I was telling you about, the 12-year-old who needed a ride home in the rain, and the guy said, "If you'll do this, I'll give you a ride." Survival trafficking is also, survival sex is where you also see the runaways.
Right.
They're out on the street. They have nowhere to go. You can sleep on my couch if you do this.
Sure.
I heard a story of a girl took a bus, went to another city, got off the bus. She was 14, had nowhere to go. She went into the cemetery thinking, "I can sleep on a gravestone. This will be safe." She had no money. She had nothing. A guy followed her from the bus station with a Subway sandwich in a bag, and she went with him.
Mm.
So it's survival sex. This is often where we see the exploitation of males, too. Males is kind, it's not a new study, but it's just coming more and more and more to the front. If you look at Shared Hope materials in the past, it was all about her life and rescuing her and helping her. And the preponderance of what we get are female, but we have to recognize males are also at risk. And in a New York study, they found that the majority of males were inducted into trafficking by these guys through survival sex. They were on the street. They needed somewhere to go. They had nowhere to go. And that's how they were tricked into it.
Wow.
So those are some of the basic kinds of trafficking. Like I said, there's like 25 different types, but that gives you an idea. And the most common that we see, that I see, is this boyfriend pimp.
Sure.
You know, I'm here for you. I'll help you. I'll be what you need. And by the way, this is what you're going to do. And if a girl's been vulnerable through sexual abuse already, and she's been sexually abused and exploited by a stepdad or something, this guy's a better option than going home.
Right.
This guy is at least says he's going to treat her nice. I mean, he's going to give her housing and food for whatever it's worth. And protection, for whatever it's worth, transportation, well, that's more than what the stepdad's doing. He's just coming into her bedroom five times a night.
Yeah.
So the guy oftentimes, his in with a girl like that is, you know what, you're already doing it. You might as well get paid for it. And then his other line is, I'll never touch you unless you want me to. Well, of course she wants him to. She loves the guy, you know. Mm-hmm. And so once he's had her do it once, then he's got a hook. Yeah. With the protected environment girls, the private school, the wealthy communities, the gated communities, the islands, Washington State has all of the islands out there, Orcas and Whidbey and Mercer and the places where, you know, we're the idyllic resort community. Uh-huh. Those kids are at risk because they don't know and their community doesn't want to talk about it. And a lot of times when girls leave a sheltered environment and go to college campuses, because the laws are getting more strict, particularly in Washington. Washington is leading the nation in a lot of ways with strict laws. Back in 2013, Senator Patton did some groundbreaking legislation that's been copied across the nation in many, many states. And so in these environments where nobody wants to talk about it, these girls leave and they go to college on the mainland, and that's where the pimps are going because the laws are getting so strict on those who buy and sell minors. They're going to the college campuses, and they're looking for those who look like they're 15 and 16. So we are starting to focus more on college campuses and starting college groups to prevent this on campus and warn girls on campus. If you remember Rebecca Bender organization from Southern Oregon, she's the second largest survivor-led organization in the U.S. She was trafficked on her college campus, and her vulnerability was she was a single mom, and she had her baby. She had lost her athletic scholarship. She was living in an apartment. And she was on campus, and this guy picked her up and became everything she hoped and dreamed for her and her baby. Mm-hmm. And then he took her to Vegas, and she actually had signed on with one of the nation's most vicious pimps.
Mm-hmm.
There was a recording just yesterday, I got it, it was on CBS in Dallas, Texas, telling her story. Pretty amazing. But that's the vulnerability. You get these kids on a college campus and they don't know, they are a target for traffickers.
Let's take a break from our interview to officially thank all of our volunteers and donors for making 2017 another incredible year. As a result of your efforts and amazing giving, we were able to reach $5.4 million in pledged money, making it the highest campaign since 2010. We also increased over 500 donors. And our volunteer tracker logged more than 11,000 hours, saving charities more than 300,000 through the volunteerism of our state employees. It was by far the most we've ever logged since starting our tracking app in 2013. We couldn't have done any of this without you, our volunteers and donors. For more information on how your agency did, how your division fared in your county, or even how many volunteer hours employees at your agency logged, visit our campaign tracker at www.cfd.wa.gov/cfd/campaign-tracker. And now, back to the interview.
So you mentioned that prevention is something that you guys focus on. It's a key in order to stop trafficking. So what types of prevention do you try to offer?
There are a lot of ways that you can prevent trafficking. One is going to be through more strict laws. One is going to be through more public letting people know the consequences, having laws that have more stringent consequences that will end demand. We're hoping to get to buyers to say, look, you do this, you're going to spend 17 years in prison, you're going to lose your professional license and your whole family probably, so don't do it. You know, so some of that prevention is through that kind of media visibility. Some is going to be through legislation. Obviously, my department is going to be through educating the public and grassroots, and we see kind of a spin-off from that. The more that communities are educated, when these cases go to trial, the jury pool is more knowledgeable, and they will be willing to bring down a conviction that looks like, you know, like 25 years for this guy. Are you serious? He just bought a kid for sex. Well, yeah, but by the time he gets caught, he probably did it 100 times, and Even if he did it once, it's still a kid's life he ruined, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah. As we educate, it will prevent, because the more convictions that get handed down, there was a conviction in Bremerton. Randy Plum, Detective Randy Plum, brought this guy down after extensive investigation. 90 years.
Wow.
That kind of stuff gets into the media, and some guy sees that and goes, shoot, I better stop buying kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's some of the ways that we do it. Mainly, prevention, restoration, and bringing justice is shared hope, three pillars, and prevention is through all of those. You know,
right.
we try to bring, I mean, it. We watch what happens when you have to restore someone. You can't ever go back. You can't say, I can restore them back to their childhood, but you can restore them to a new normal and a productive and wonderful life. We see that journey, and it is horrific, and many of them never make it to a new normal.
Right.
They'll go back to their pimp 7 times statistically before you can get them out because they think he loves them.
Sure.
So we are passionate to prevent. We are passionate to educate kids. We are passionate that kids know the signs and don't get involved in the first place. So that's really what drives me. That's what drives me.
So you hit on this a little bit, the types of people that are more susceptible to slave labor. Are there certain industries that are more susceptible to using slave labor or human trafficking? What type of industries or what type of individuals can you pinpoint are going to be the perpetrators of this?
Yeah, there are excellent statistics there in Washington State. Val Ritchie in King County has done a tremendous job with his Buyer Beware program to make statistical graphs, you know, kind of showing that. And he does this mainly from calls into sex sites, if you can believe that, on our internet. You can buy a kid for sex and get it delivered basically as easy as a pizza.
Wow.
He has gone in and done extensive research on those websites and followed those who contact, those who make contact with those sites, and then created statistics from that. One of the most common buying segments in the business community is IT. Now, I'm not sure if that's because Seattle area has so much IT. You've got Microsoft, you've got Amazon, you've got all the big people there. But he has found in his statistics that's the majority, and I don't have that in front of me to give you the exact numbers.
Yeah.
He has a pie graph, and the largest piece of pie for those who will seek out purchasing sex online, this is not necessarily minors, but purchasing sex online, is in the IT community. One interesting statistic that he does bring forth is that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is when most people are shopping for online sex. That means these people are at work.
That's
and
insane.
Probably using business computers.
Wow.
And if they're shopping for a minor, that puts the business at liability.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a group called Best Businesses Ending Sex Trade, Dr. Mar Bretman Smith, and she trains businesses. She trains hoteliers. She's done a tremendous job there in the Puget Sound region, and now she's really gone national online training. And her work is very much impacting the business world, saying, wake up, look at what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Your business, your organization could get sued because of this.
Yeah.
Val Ritchie recently did the Filthy 50. He did the arrests. He was involved in prosecuting that whole group. And it was 50 who had an online review board where they, it's kind of like Yelp,
yeah,
where they reviewed and recommended people to buy for sex. And he went after them.
Good.
That's a story that's worth noting. I mean, these guys were top of the food chain in the community. They were executives. They're licensed professionals. He said when they were arrested, they cried like babies.
Mm-hmm.
Please, 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 you know, I'll do anything. Just don't make it a felony, because if it's a felony, they lose their license for life.
Yeah.
And they cannot practice whatever field they're in. But that was a huge victory. I mean, I did the happy dance when I saw
nice,
that.
Yeah.
That's what needs to happen for prevention. Businesses have to, every sector of our society has to be made aware.
Yeah.
But if businesses become aware and begin to look for this and then make the call, just simply make a call, it's going to begin to be a deterrent. If hoteliers understand it, hotel managers, our ambassadors have a very basic hotel manager presentation. that just gives them the basic signs and then sends them to a website. Sandra Day O'Connor, former Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, created a program called Safe Project. Mm-hmm. And in that, she did a great overview with basic education for hoteliers and travel, airports, all different travel sector. And it's just 10 or 15 minute videos. She did like 6 or 7 of them. And it's like, what does this look like on the front desk? What does this look like in the hallway of the hotel? What does this look like in the parking lot? What does it look like in the room? And then what to do about it. I mean, it's such a great, and it's free. It's online, mm-hmm. so anyone can access it. I love that resource because ShareHelp really has not developed a hotel training per se because others are doing a great job at it already. And those two are the ones that we definitely stand with is BEST, B-E-S-T, and then the Safe Action Project.
Excellent. Very nice.
Excellent.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and wants to begin giving to ShareHelp International. Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Absolutely. And you know I'm going to say this first, sharedhope.org. That's where you want to go.
There
and there's a button right there to donate. Right now, people who partner with us, they can be part of supporting. We have 14 shelter and service organizations that we are helping throughout the world. There's mm-hmm. Nepal, India, and Jamaica, as well as 9 programs in the U.S., so far, currently, in this last year, 204 survivors were brought education, job skills, housing, medical care, and freedom. 118 women and children were provided supervised, supportive housing. So that's our programs. We have 14 internationally and 9 in the U.S. We just funded a new village in Pune, India, which I'm just thrilled about. There's 27 kids there who now have a forever home. And if you understand the culture of some of these countries, children of prostituted victims have no life. They don't get birth certificates. They're not recognized as people. They are lower than the trash pickers, and there's no protection for them. So we're thrilled to continue. Since 1998, we established that first home in Mumbai, and now there's one in Pune and also in Nepal, as well as in Jamaica.
Nice.
We provide HIV/AIDS-related medical visits to trafficking victims in southern India. As you know, the drugs now are very sophisticated, and if they simply have a cow and milk, so they can get a protein diet with these drugs, they can lead a productive and healthy life. They can even have children. They can continue with a life, and those drugs are very expensive, so right. we do support that. We have 13 survivors weekly in a survivor-led virtual mentoring program that is led by Rebecca Bender Rebecca Bender Initiative. And those are survivors from rural areas who can't access networking or services. There's nobody out there. They're a little bitty town out in the middle of nowhere. And so online, they can get a personal mentor, and they can join a group of 5 to 6 girls, usually girls. There are males as well. And they can be encouraged in their journey and brought through this study that shows them, like about the 5th week, I think it's No, He Doesn't Love You. And this is based on Rebecca Bender's own story and her own journey. It's very powerful, and Shared Hope continues to support that program. At the Just Conference in New Orleans in October, we had 860 people from 45 states, including Canada and France. We had 175 police officers, 100 survivors of sex trafficking, and more than 60 of those survivors were given scholarships to attend the conference. Our national conference is recognized for training professionals and advocates. It used to be under the Department of Justice. They had one. It was defunded, and Shared Hope picked up that ball about 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the next one will be October 16th to 18th in San Diego.
Very
and
nice.
That's where
Sweet.
We train professionals.
Awesome.
We also just started a web series so we can train people online. Super excited about that. Because small communities can't always afford to send their officers or their professionals to a training. The travel expenses plus the expense of going and paying a registration. Now it's online, and they can actually get continuing education units at a very minimal cost and train their entire department. So we're super excited about that.
Right on.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I want to thank you, Joe, for coming on and talking about what is a fairly... fairly heavy issue for folks to hear about, but I think is really important to get out there.
It is, and thank you, Philip and Heather. I really appreciate it. just the fact that someone wants to know more is a start.
Yes.
And they can order a Renting Lacey book from the Shared Hope website and kind of figure out the story of how America's children are being prostituted. That book changed my life.
Yeah.
I read it in 2009.
Yeah.
And at the time, my husband and I were both associate pastors in South Seattle in a large church. And it completely changed our lives. We both now work full-time for anti-trafficking organizations and live here in Mesa, Arizona.
Right.
And that little book is kind of the Uncle Tom's Cabin of this slavery movement abolish slavery in our generation.
Do you have any events coming up that you'd like to talk about?
You know, the next big one is that Faith Summit in June, June 20 to the 22nd in St. Paul, Minnesota at Bethel University.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's going to be to equip faith communities. Now, not everyone there is going to come from a faith community because we have a lot of professionals, a lot of service providers, a lot of non-governmental organizations. We also have some detectives and police officers coming to share. We have a lineup of amazing speakers. Eric Metaxas will be our keynote speaker on Wednesday night, and we have a Minnesota detective who's going to share about when he goes out on stings, how he offers hope to these guys that are about to lose their whole life because they've purchased a child for sex. And so we've got a great lineup of speakers. That's coming up. And then the other conference I mentioned to you is October 16th to the 18th in San Diego, and that'll be our professionals training and advocates conference, which will be about 1,000 people
awesome.
This year.
Awesome.
Right on.
Great. So that was the interview with Joe Lembo, the National Growth Strategy Outreach Manager of Shared Hope International. It was an illuminating interview, to say the least.
Yeah.
What were some of the things you got out of it?
Well, I think that, like, when she was talking about the kids who run away from home, like, you know, you think about when you were a kid wanting to run away, and you're just like mad at something.
Right.
You run away for half an hour or 2 hours.
Right.
You're outside. It's raining. You're like, I'm hungry. Go back kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
But like kids who run away, they're running away for legitimate reasons.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And getting like those kids being immediately scooped up
I
by
know.
Human traffickers.
I know.
That is terrible.
I thought about
terrifying.
That too. That was the major thing takeaway for me.
Yeah.
Is when she talked about the whole runaway thing. And
yeah.
she talked about how like if, and I just, you know, hearkened back to if I lived in a major city,
yeah.
how much trouble you could find yourself in if you found your way out and decided
yeah.
you were just going to run away or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah.
That was tough. I really appreciated the angle that they're attempting to take, where they're really attempting to reach the people who may be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting.
Well, yeah, prevention is a big key,
yeah.
I would think, to stopping people from becoming victims.
Right. But I think a lot of times there is always this sense that, like, well, what we'll do is we'll work with... Then they do this. They work with local governments and all that sort of
yeah.
stuff. And that will solve the problem. Well, the reality is you really have to actually go to the potential victims
yeah.
and actually talk to them and say, this is what could happen
yeah.
if you make these type of decisions. That yeah. guy... that likes you so much
and so respectful,
he may not like
friend.
You all that much.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I thought that was super interesting. I found it interesting that, like the interview with Safe Place, and we kind of mentioned it in the intro, that the two are so interconnected. And the reason why I say that is because the same method gets used.
Yeah, the perpetrators.
By the perpetrators,
have,
right?
Yeah.
They use the same method. They sit there and say, like, I love you, baby, it's gonna be okay, and they convince you
mm-hmm.
and they paint this glorious picture of who they are.
Yeah.
And then they wait for like the perfect time. Some of these guys are waiting like 9 months, a year, 2 years before they finally get you so wrapped in it that they can convince you. That is a long con by definition.
That is,
gentlemen.
Absolutely.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? That is also crazy. Because
yeah.
how long, because just like with the domestic violence thing,
yeah.
how long that these people can convince, how long it takes, they can convince the community around you and the people around you
mm-hmm.
that, like, everything's okay.
Yep.
And you're the crazy one.
Yep.
Is so interesting to me.
Yeah.
That they do it the same way.
Yeah.
That there's the same sort of predatory traits that these guys have.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
It is terrifying.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we're hoping that Joe and her team continue to fight the good fight and try to solve this issue, because it is a scary one for sure. It's one of the freakiest ones out there as far as I can tell. So if you are interested in helping them do that, you can give to Shared Hope International through the CFD. They are in the Combined Fund Drive. Yep. We'll have the link up there for you. The last thing I'm going to hit on is some upcoming events. So we are in recognition phase at this point. We're going to go around to a bunch of different cities, and we're going to recognize the volunteers for everything they did.
Yeah.
Starting with Spokane in just 2 weeks, February 7th, we're going to be out in Spokane for their recognition luncheon at the Steam Plant Grill. We've got a couple of folks who were actually nominated.
Nice.
And we have some statistical awards to give out as well. Thurston County, which is by all accounts the biggest one that we do, on March 2nd will be at the Little Creek Casino out in Shelton.
Yeah.
It'll be a superhero themed. We have all sorts of craziness going on. that's where most of our volunteers will probably be recognized.
Sure.
Who won awards or were nominated and such. The Snow King, Snohomish King. I love Snow King.
Yeah.
It makes me think of Homer Simpson episode where he's like
where
the Plow
the
King or whatever.
King, yeah.
Snow King on March 15th. They'll be recognizing folks in Snohomish and King County, obviously. It'll be an evening event. And Whatcom is still to come. We don't have any dates yet, but once we do, we'll let everybody know.
Yeah.
So those will be right around the corner.
You know, honestly, I think Homer was Mr. Plow and Barney was competition. He was
Okay. Yeah. He was the Plow King.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
The Plow King. Mm-hmm.
Man. Yeah, yeah. What was that song he sang? It was something like, that name again is Mr. Plow.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Homer.
Homer, we love you.
Yeah, you're just a part of our lives now.
Yeah.
Homer. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Homer Simpson.
Yeah, thanks, Homer Simpson. Thank you to the people for listening. We appreciate it. We'll be back with episode 17 soon. Talk to you later.
Bye.